Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. My name is Mark Ellis. With me, as always, is the amazing Jacqueline Coley. Jacqueline, boy, do I have news for you.
What is your news?
I had a screening of a movie called The Batman last night.
I think we were both there.
No, I was. I couldn't go. That was the the news, is that I wasn't able to make it because I really want to go see it. So I have like 30 people behind the scenes kind of trying to pull strings for me because I'm such a child. And then they're like, hey, well, can you go tonight? And I'm like, oh, damn it. I had sets. And so I had to go tell Yucks on stage. So I missed it. But you've seen The Batman.
I have seen The Batman.
Oh,
man,
my God.
That's disappointing because, yeah, I was there last night. And, you know, Mark, you can abuse our friendship every now and again to come and kick it.
I know. I hate asking, but
I'm like, why are you talking to your old relationship people? Me and you are still in a very non-sexual relationship here, and I feel bad that you're backsliding with your ex.
Who's my
ex? That's who it was. I know it was your ex. I know which ex it was. I'm not talking about our mutual friend. I'm talking about the place you used to work that I call your ex.
Oh, the place I used to work. Okay.
I know you're going through your ex. When you're trying to get through things.
Well, I'm glad you got to see The Batman. I'm sorry I've not abused our friendship more. I will definitely do that in the future, especially if I don't get to see this movie soon, because I'm so hyped about that movie. And before I get to see that movie, now we get to talk about the last Batman movie, at least the last sort of standalone. Batman is the one and only star-ish of the movie, and that would be the closing of Christopher Nolan's epic Batman trilogy that rescued us all from bat nipples and bat cheeks. The Dark Knight Rises. The movie is 87% certified fresh. Woo, that's a high score. And it's even higher in the audience score. It's 90%. And we have a fan shout out to get to from across the pond. UK's own Daniel Sperling.
Oh, I
says,
love that. Can you
Daniel,
say it? Wait. No. Say it in an accent. Come on.
Okay, he sent us a nice little diatribe. I can't do the whole thing, but I will say, from across the pond, Daniel Sperling. Spelling. That's good. I'll tell you who does a really good accent from that land is our guest that we're about to meet.
Oh.
Very, very good. Particularly in the world of Batman, very, very good impressionist. So Daniel says, is it an epic subversive and fitting finale to the beloved franchise that revolutionized the comic book movie? Or is it an overstuffed, pretentious, action-light mess featuring a laughable villain and the worst death scene of all time? For the record, I am in the former camp. So Daniel is a fan of the movie, but I think he understands that not everybody might feel the same way. And I would just say maybe, Daniel, but just maybe, both of your statements can be true. So with that, let's bring in our very special guest today. He is not only one of the greatest Schmodown players in any division to ever live, he's also a author. He's got a new book all about James Bond coming out soon. He is our buddy, Mike Kalinowski. Mike, you've done so much with DC movie news over your career. I know how much you love these movies. Let's talk about The Dark Knight Rises. You're a Batman guy. You have multiple Batman costumes in your house. What do we think about the tomato meter for The Dark Knight Rises? 87% certified fresh. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong, sir?
I think they're right. 100% right. I think it caps out the trilogy perfectly. And I would say, and arguably so, that it is the second best film in the trilogy. Yeah, okay. A lot of people, I have a hot take on this film and a lot of people don't agree with me, but now hearing your score, I think they do.
I mean, it's, again, even higher with the audience score. So, yeah. Jacqueline, what do you say about The Dark Knight Rises? Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong?
I mean, I think Rotten Tomatoes is a little bit wrong in the sense that I do think it's overgassed. That's what I'd like to call a Nolan curve. They gave that same curve to Tenet. There's certain directors that get a curve. PTA, okay. QT, Nolan, they get a curve. And I'm sorry to say that I believe that to be true, but it is. Because I do think that too many critics have sat through films of theirs that they absolutely adored to really want to come for them for something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that they're like saying they love something that they hate, but they're just able to squint past all the piles of crap that are in this movie. And I'm saying if you don't squint past them, it's probably in the mid-70s. Still certified fresh, I think, but 85, son.
Oh, this is going to be a fun conversation because I don't think that Rotten Tomatoes is right. I think that they're wrong. And I think that this is not a fresh movie. I think that there is a lot of greatness in this movie. But to me, this movie plays out like the entire Rocky trilogy, where it's really great for moments. And then it just completely falls off a cliff with Rocky V. There's so much, especially in the third act, that bothers me and I cannot get over it. But really things throughout the movie I have problems with, especially because I am comparing it, unfairly so for some, to Batman Begins, my favorite comic book movie of all time, and maybe the greatest superhero film achievement ever, The Dark Knight. So I don't think Rotten Tomatoes nailed it here. I think it's way too high, but we're going to talk about it. But first, Jacqueline, do you want to give us a brief synopsis as to exactly what Dark Knight is rising where?
The Dark Knight Rises, which I will go ahead and say, like, I don't think that I'm going to give this the like synopsis that anybody would hope for because I don't want to pop a blood vessel, but I'm going to give you my best adaptation possible. Basically, this is cut forward about a few years after the events of The Dark Knight. Harvey Dent is dead as district attorney and they lionized him, but there's new sort of, I would say, folks that are coming out from the League of Shadows. And one of them sort of sets things off and it's the character of Bane. He has one of the most epic entrances ever. Doesn't talk where anyone can understand him, but he is basically trying to emerge as this new leader from the underworld. Also, Selina Kyle pops up and she's a cat burglar who's trying to steal stuff from Bruce Wayne. Essentially, Commissioner Gordon is trying to track Bane. He gets him. They essentially let Bane escape. And this, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt pops up and he's just so interesting. And then we also have Marianne Cotillard playing a character who is presented to be one way at first, but it's eventually revealed that she is Ra's al Ghul's daughter and that the story that Batman is sort of told about this character, which he believes to be Bane, is actually her. That's sort of like the third act turn. But God, I've got to like get through this where Batman breaks his back. Batman gets in prison, breaks his back, heals it in like 2 seconds, then comes out to sort of like battle Bane in the third act. And in the third act of the film, when he's trying to battle Bane, there's this nuclear bomb that is supposed to blow up Gotham because this whole idea of the League of Shadows is trying to destroy Gotham as sort of revenge for Ra's al Ghul and the dastardly things that they've been doing, whatever. It's not really, Talia wants revenge. I'll just put it to you that way. So, and the whole idea of who the Batman is also being sort of lambasted and switched a bit because it's this whole idea of like who watches the Watchmen and not everybody is convinced that the Batman is a good thing and Bane does a very good job of saying, hey, maybe not. At the very end though, Batman does save the day. And he ends up taking his Batcraft out into the ocean where it blows up. He saves the city. Batman is assumed to be dead. And Alfred, who spends most of the movie regretting the fact that he let Bruce Wayne, the boy, become Bruce Wayne, the Batman, is sort of left with the shell of his remnants. And that's where he sees at a French Parisian cafe what he foretold. He sees Bruce Wayne across the way. They don't say anything. He's sitting with Selina Kyle and he lived.
Ooh, man, that's a
I think that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it, right? Did I get everything?
Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah. Mike, I'm literally like thinking back. I'm like, dusting of the movie.
Yeah. I'm like, there we go. I think I got the main characters. Basically, anytime anyone shows up who you recognize, they're going to be doing more than what they appear. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt's Robin. Robin. I forgot that part.
Maybe. Yeah. Could be. We're not really sure. We'll talk about it. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff. Before we get to that, now we turn it over to our expert review curation manager, Tim Ryan. That's right. He's been curating the reviews that were around at the time of the movie's release back in 2012. Tim, it's your 2 minutes.
2 minutes with Tim. Tell us what the critics were saying back then. Ooh, 2 minutes with Tim.
It's a recurring theme on this podcast when we're discussing sequels. When you've made a huge hit, what do you do for an encore? The Dark Knight from 2008 was hailed as an instant classic, so any subsequent Christopher Nolan Batman films were likely to pale in comparison. That said, critics felt The Dark Knight was a satisfying conclusion to the trilogy, one which was messy in spots but demonstrated Nolan's auteurist assurance and benefited from strong performances, particularly from Tom Hardy as Bane. The Dark Knight Rises is certified fresh at 87% on the Tomato Meter with 372 reviews, and it has a 90% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a fresh review, Jason Bailey of FlavorWire wrote, "Nolan somehow never loses control. This is an accomplished and tremendously confident filmmaker, both in the execution of his thrilling chases and action beats, and in his manipulation of the complicated, multifaceted narrative." However, in a rotten review, Ryan Gilby of The New Statesman wrote, "Nolan has become hooked on the grandiose, at times even the biblical. For anyone who admired the witty playfulness of his early films, it's a dark night indeed." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "The Dark Knight Rises is an ambitious, thoughtful, and potent action film that concludes Christopher Nolan's franchise in spectacular fashion." So that's The Dark Knight Rises. Let's kick it back to Jacqueline and Mark. This city needs them. Back to you, folks.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, look, it seemed like, and I was one of those that was fresh at the time because I saw it and maybe it was rose-tinted glasses, but I remember having issues with the movie and being concerned about expressing my issues just because, like, I knew everybody else was going to be loving this movie. And so I kind of felt like I was out on an island. I think that I think a lot of people feel like this Tomato Meter is a little too high, but Mike thinks it's right on. Jacqueline thinks it's a little too high, and I think it's way too high. So this is why we have these conversations, and we'll try to keep it as civil as possible. No promises. Let's transition to movie talk. Brian, hit the music. I read a very interesting quote from none other than Christopher Nolan talking about this film, where he was really, as far as the trilogy itself goes, he said that Batman Begins is very much an origin story, and Gotham is viewed in quite symbolic, romantic terms. With The Dark Knight, we switch genres. We're looking at the media, the police, the wealthy, the poor. And then in The Dark Knight Rises, we move into the more disaster movie territory, what Nolan said. So, Mike, you hinted at the top that this movie is number two in your sort of trilogy ranking. And like I said, Batman Begins is my favorite comic book movie of all time. What is your ranking for this trilogy? What is number one?
It definitely Begins, because like you, it's like, it is probably my favorite comic book movie. It fluctuates between that and Batman 89. And then I put Rises is number two. I think The Dark Knight is the weakest in the trilogy. And I know the pitchforks are out for that one, but I like some comic book in my comic book movie. The Dark Knight is a great film. There is no question about that. I put in top 100 films of all time. It's just not a great Batman movie. Whereas The Dark Knight Rises brought the Batman, the comic book, back to his world of that Nolan was creating.
Yeah, and it was sort of jarring, at least for me, Jacqueline, particularly once we get to that third act, when it does feel, I mean, I would even compare it more to like the Adam West Batman than I would something that I saw in like The Dark Knight, with, you know, having to drive the exasperated death and flying the bat copter to drop a nuclear bomb in the ocean and all that stuff. Do you have like a clear cut favorite in this trilogy, Ms. Coley?
Not, I mean, look, it's really funny. I have an intense relationship with this. This was the very first movie trilogy that I ever wrote about as a professional writer. And it was the first time I ever got paid. I wrote about The Dark Knight Rises and honestly fandom. and how beloved that film gets, it's the quickest way to send somebody into their feelings if you just criticize it. When people started, it was this whole idea of when people started associating their personality with the things that they buy instead of the things that they do, right? That's consumerism at its core. And, you know, Disney, Marvel, all these places have fed that for years. And so you now have these people that are so fused with IP, they can't separate the IP from who they are. And I, like, so this trilogy is weird for me. Like, it always showed me, like, that was the line of demarcation when people started, like, literally losing their sense about the Academy snub for The Dark Knight. That was way my world at that time, was just being obsessed about the Oscars. And I was like, these people have lost their mind. So I they're all about the same for me, just varying degrees. I don't like Batman Begins as much, but I do appreciate that it's better filmmaking. I think that The Dark Knight is one of the greatest cinematic achievements ever. However, if you really examine it, it is a brilliant Joker movie, not a brilliant Batman movie. And yeah, it's interesting what Mike says. Like, so I don't know. It's hard. Well, I guess Dark Knight. There you go.
When you look at any trilogy, it's very hard to ingratiate fans to it, to get them to show up en masse or something like that. And then it's also hard to stick the landing with the final movie. With this one, I'll forever sing Nolan's praises just for what he was able to do with Batman Begins, picking up the baton that was left from Batman and Robin and really showing us all the way, hey, you can have an iconic character and they can be in a bad movie or two bad movies, and we're just going to wait a little bit and then we will pick up the mantle and we will take it in a bold new direction. That was so exciting because Batman is just too cool of a character to have gone out like that, like he did in 97. And so to have him back after some time in 2005, I thought was just an epic comeback for the ages. Almost as epic as the comeback that Bruce Wayne makes in The Dark Knight Rises, healing his back so quickly. The medical experts, even the medical community, the actual medical community is divided on whether his back could heal at all.
That is true. That is actually true.
Yeah.
That is true, which I thought was funny. I think that's a Nolan curve too.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I also think it's cool when Mel Gibson puts his shoulder back into place in the Lethal Weapon movies by banging it against the wall. So
I think it's physically feasible and they want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I bet you some doctors we saw a medical journal where this dude healed his back in 2 weeks.
That is one of the scenes, I guess you would say, that does turn me off from the movie, but it didn't start there. Mike, I do want to kick it off with you, though. Like, what is the scene from The Dark Knight Rises that you say, this is why, like you said, I got comic book with my comic book movie?
Oh, so the scene with that, like, that's a tough one because it was more of a feeling for the entire film for me.
Okay.
Because I was just coming off of The Dark Knight. So it just opened up the world a little bit more with him going back with Ra's al Ghul and bringing the League of Shadows back into it. You know, so in the character of Bane was a little more comic booky in the way that they went with him. I didn't mind it as much as a lot of people did. I have no real big attachment to the character of Bane. So I wasn't like, oh, he's not portrayed the way, you know, he didn't come from, a South American prison with his teddy bear and, you know, a lot of the comic tropes of the character. So I didn't bother me. It didn't bother me with that. But just, I mean, from the opening get go with that scene and everything, I want to love how practically it was done. And Nolan does that in all his films with the practicality of filming the stunts. But it just felt like, I know people kind of look at it as a negative with the bomb and the end, the whole that third act, but that just felt comic booky to me. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way at all. I mean that in a very positive way for me.
Yeah, I'm. You'll appreciate this, Mike, because that was right in my wheelhouse of being a big comic book honk, where like I wanted to go to the comic book store every day after school, was when those issues were running, when Bane broke Batman's back. Like, it was dark times, kids,
yeah,
in the 90s for your DC superheroes. You got Superman dying, and then you get Batman breaking his back and Bane being the cause of it. And so that fight sequence that takes place in the Gotham sewer between Batman, who's come back to Gotham after 7 years just being nowhere, everybody thought he was gone for good. He's back and he's fighting Bane, and Batman's a little rusty, he's a little out of shape. So that fight was something that I was just looking forward to. I mean, I was looking forward to seeing that in Batman and Robin. And obviously that was a very different Bane than we got in that movie. And I think, Jacqueline, one of the big issues for me is that I don't feel like the fight scenes really pay off. I don't think that they look all that great. It felt choreographed to me. It felt like I was watching two stunt performers just go through the motions, and I never felt that emotional buzz that I thought I would feel watching a Batman fight scene. I thought the fight scenes in Batman Begins were done a lot better than the fight scenes in The Dark Knight Rises. And so that was a letdown for me.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What's the scene for you, Jacqueline, that sways you one way or another? Like, what's the standout moment in The Dark Knight Rises? Is it good or is it bad?
It's good, but I don't know if it's necessarily greatness. One of the things that I will say about The Dark Knight Rises is The Dark Knight was a brilliant movie with an okay marketing campaign that included the Joker. The Dark Knight Rises was a brilliant marketing campaign for an okay movie. So, like... And if you remember the trailer, there's that shot of the football player in the stadium of Gotham, and he's like running, and like the ground literally is like coming below him. Like,
it's Hines Ward, actual Pittsburgh Steeler at the time.
It was?
That was Hines Ward, and Ben Roethlisberger's also on the sideline too. So they both played
I did
for
not
the
know
Gotham
that.
Rogues.
I appreciate that. But yeah, it literally starts to crumble beneath him. One of the coolest shots in the world is the whole stadium sort of like collapsing around him. That level of destruction, which felt warranted and not gratuitous because it was committed by a madman. Because like that was the issue with Man of Steel, was there was all this gratuitous world destruction and it felt unnecessary. This was like, oh no, I'm doing this to show how much I don't care. Like, I'm literally taking it to the heart of America, football. Like, Nolan was in his feelings on that. He's like, bring it to the Yanks on this one, you know? Like, it was hardcore. And that moment is just absolutely incredible, and how it was captured in that trailer. So if I had to say the scene, I might just say the trailer, which is an amalgamation of scenes, but that scene in particular and everything that sort of like led up to that moment, when he stands there agape, so does the audience.
I do think it's awesome in this movie. And I will give Mike some credit here for championing The Dark Knight Rises, because I think it's awesome to kick the movie off with Bruce Wayne just being this hobbled rumor of nothing. I mean, the guy's pretty much Quasimodo at this point, if you ask the townspeople of Gotham, even people that are showing up at his house. And I love the angle of the Robin-ish character played by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, himself an orphan, who realizes instantly that guy is his tortured soul. He's faking this, and that is actually Batman. I love that he was able to put that together. I think that's a really cool, Mike, maybe to borrow your words, that was a comic booky moment to me, is hearing how Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character could figure that out. So I love seeing those characters. But I got to be honest, the standout in this movie to me is Selina Kyle, played by Anne Hathaway. I think Catwoman, she's got the best fight scene in the movie, which may disappoint folks like me who are lining up to see Bane versus Batman. She has a fight scene early in the movie where she's doing a little bait and switch at a bar, and it's great. And she is just so watchable, because you're looking at what her plot line is, trying to get this thing that completely wipes what your identity is. And she wants to start over. You see some real humanity there. She's a villain, but she does some good things. So is she an anti-hero or an anti-villain? Like, that's the character for me that is the standout in the movie. Mike, you can say Batman, you can say Bane. Who is the standout of this movie to you?
Okay, you got me on the spot again. Like, because there's so many, like, of this film, and why it hits me so well is because when you think about these films as a whole, they never was meant to be a trilogy. Every film nowadays, like, we're making a trilogy. Even the Batman that's coming out, they're like, yeah, we're planning a trilogy. Like, Nolan didn't do that. Even with the Batman Begins, it was one off. They said, all right, we'll do the Joker at the end. We don't know if we're going to get there. It's just a nod to the fans. And then after the Dark Knight, they were like, well, Heath gone and we don't want to go back to this world, you know. But then they said, all right, we have a story. So the fact that they were able to bring it full circle like that, for me, I mean, I want to say Alfred is my favorite character in this film.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because there was a lot of stuff with Bruce that I didn't care for in this film. But I have to look at this as a Batman fan with this film. And maybe that's why a lot of people don't care for it as much. To them, we all have our version of Batman, who our version is. That's why a lot of people didn't like Ben Affleck, because to them, Batman doesn't kill. Hmm. Well, your Batman doesn't kill. You know, a lot of people said, but Bruce Wayne retired. He wouldn't retire. Why? He would never give up. He would never. He's not going to stop being Batman. He's going to die being Batman. It's like, that's your Batman. Nolan's Batman retired and was given a happy ending. And to see Alfred be with this man his whole life, and he has that, you know, speech early on about, Mark, I won't bore you with the impression yet again. I know you're probably ad nauseum full of it.
Well, I haven't been there.
Okay, well, then excuse me here. I'll have this dream that I go to Florence and there's a little cafe in the Bank of the Arno, and I'll sit down and I'll order myself a Fernet Banker, and I'll see you and you see me and we don't say anything, but I'd know that you'd made it. I knew that you were happy. I didn't want this life for you. I didn't want you to come back to Gotham after 7 years. I wanted something better for you, because I've loved you since I first heard his tears echo through this house. So,
good Lord, y'all. And the Oscar goes to legit.
So, oh, that's so good.
That was the movie, Mark, where the impression started, I think, because he's got that scene. He eats every single word that he says, and it's so damn great watching him.
Oh, it's so juicy.
He eats and he chokes on it.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Alfred's the hero for me for that film.
Alfred might be my favorite character in The Dark Knight, because Alfred is just telling the story. That famous scene where he's talking about the Joker and describing the mentality of the Joker to Bruce. And he's like, some men just want to watch the world burn. And then hearing the backstory of Alfred, who was apparently Rambo when he was younger, is awesome.
Yeah. No,
I was in Burma once and I'm like, oh, what the hell were you doing in Burma? Give us that
movie. What were you doing in Burma?
I love Alfred. I mean, Michael Caine's great, but also just how the character of Alfred has evolved, because Michael Gough was great as the advice giving butler, but this Alfred just feels like there's a little more to him than meets the eye. And so I'll give you that. This is, if you look at this as Alfred's movie, Jacqueline, maybe I can get it to fresh.
It is. I mean, Alfred and Bane. I mean, look, I know people are going to give me crap for it, but I lived for Bane and all of his stupidity of the voice and the stuff. Like, I just felt like Tom Hardy was just having a blast. Tom Hardy has a blast on Christopher Nolan sets. I really do. I think he's like a London lad and they need that like London lad pairing. That's one of the reasons why he could convince him basically to sit in a prop plane for 3 months to do Dunkirk for him. Like, Tom Hardy, the movie star, ain't doing that for many other people. Like, you know what I'm saying? I just wanted to add, Hathaway and Bale had great chemistry. Mm-hmm. I always said it paled in Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Keaton. Like, when you watch Catwoman and Batman in the Burton, like, you were like, bend her over it. Like, you were just like, go, get it on. Like, you are so ready for them to bang. You know what I mean? Like, pull his hair back with the nails, girl. I will tell you this. It's not a review. I will just say this. And this has been said in the press, and I will echo it. I read recently that Zoe Kravitz said that the chemistry between her and Robert Pattinson on set was intense. She needs a better adjective. It was electric. It was palpitationally hot. It literally sent waves of sexuality through my being. I've never in my life wanted to stand up in a theater and shove two actors together more. It was so good. I legitimately was almost taken aback by how much I wanted to watch those two get it on.
Man, really missed an opportunity to shove popcorn in my face and watch that last night, but it will happen soon.
I just wanted to add that on the Zoe front, because I was literally gasped by it last night. It was so good.
Well, with this one, it really is the moments when Batman is away, far, far away from Gotham and Selina Kyle, that I think draws the ire of a lot of people like me. So, Mike, I do want to give you the floor here when we talk about that third act, when Bruce Wayne goes to prison because Bane knocks him out, and they basically are going to drop him in the pit where Bane allegedly crawled out from. We realize that maybe it wasn't Bane doing the crawling after the end of the movie, but they drop Batman in this legendary pit that is full of the world's worst criminals, that is thousands of miles away from Gotham. That is all awesome. And I also love the reasoning that Bane tells Bruce. He's like, hey, I'm not going to kill you yet because I want you to watch. I'm going to put a TV on the other side of the bars so you have to watch the news. Can you imagine? Everybody listening out there, Bane is another level of psychopath. He makes you watch the news 24/7. Can you imagine the last 2 years if you had to watch the news every waking second? It would be awful. Plus, you're in prison. And then that's how Batman, his back heals very magically. He makes the jump after a while to get out of the pit, and then he comes back to save Gotham. Mike, the third act for you, particularly those prison scenes where Bruce is rebuilding his body with some help from some very nice suspension ropes. What is your take on all of Act Three? Does it still work for you?
Absolutely. And I know a lot of people do come at me because I do like that. And I think the problem is, and I've learned in all kind of comic book movies with myself, is a lot of people, and myself included, take what we know of the character and infer it into the material that we're being given and watched. To me, the scene with Bruce getting his back healed, like he's you know, an incredible athlete, an incredible physical specimen. Yeah, he hasn't been Batman for 8 years, but he is not a normal man. So he would heal faster than a normal man. He knows, you know, and they don't show that. This is just stuff that I've inferred from knowing who Batman is. And it's the same when a lot of people had a problem. It's like, how did he get back to Gotham? He was in this hole on the other side of the world. How did he get back there? And to me, it's like, well, look at Batman Begins. He traveled all over the world with nothing but the clothes on his back. How did he do that? It's Batman. What did you need? You know, 5 more minutes in a 3-hour movie of him, you know, jumping on a steam freighter and hiding out in crates of a crate and traveling across the Atlantic Ocean. Did you need that in a 3-hour movie? No, you just kind of infer and you go along for the ride.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, how did he get back into Gotham? The bridges were blown up. I'm like, he's Batman. You don't think he's mapped the subways? He knows where he's going. He knows his city.
He's mapped the subway and all that stuff. I guess my big question is the timing, because either his back healed in 3 days. I think according to the actual lore, it was like 80 days or something like that. But it just feels like in that time that we already would have had the whatever the conclusion of Bane and taking over Gotham adds up.
The only thing I can go off of is because they didn't do any kind of timestamp is the bomb goes off in 23 days. That was the big thing. Like regardless, they you know, you've got to put the core back in it. But we're, you know, Bane's whole plan of like, you know, someone's got a trigger and they're going to blow it, but it would have gone up in 23 days. So you've got to fit in that time frame, which is, you know, physically, I would think impossible. I think like what Jacqueline said, someone probably read an article somewhere was like, well, these scientists say that these doctors, they can heal it back in 2 weeks. So we're going to go off of that one piece of medical jargon.
Yeah, I don't need the medical experts to weigh in on movie. Lord knows, I don't think that they would really be kind to one of my favorite Van Damme movies, Hard Target. I don't know that you can just, you know, punch a snake to sleep and then bite its rattle off. Then it'll sleep pleasantly before waking up just in the nick of time. Jacqueline, there was a doctor that Vulture interviewed for talking about this movie. And they said that, okay, look, first of all, don't try any of this at home because Batman's got like part of his spine is like sticking out. And so his cellmate just punches it back into place. And it's like, okay, fine. And then they suspend him from a rope. Now, some back experts actually would encourage you to do one of those like hang suspension things to help stretch your back. But you should probably be a lot more careful with it than just hanging from upside down from like some sort of suspension that you made in prison. Does the third act muddle the proceedings for you? Or are you just, because there's a lot of storylines, there's a lot of stuff going on at all times. It's just, it goes at a breakneck pace. Is that cool with you?
No, but not for the reason you would think. It's not cool with me, not because I cannot suspend the disbelief that Mike says. I am not okay with it because you cannot do that with Christopher Nolan, because this was the beginning of him deciding he did not care about his audiences. And it is a firm belief of mine. I don't know the man personally, but I would just tell you, as his movies progress, he is less interested in bringing the audience along and more interested in what he wants. And I do think there's a part of him that's like, if you're too stupid to understand this movie as I wanted it crafted, then you don't need to be here. If you don't want to see the movie on the biggest screen possible, you're not going to see my movie. If you're not going to see it in the theater, I don't care. You are not a viewer to me. He has said this publicly. He does not believe people that see movies at home on, you know, God forbid, on your phone or wherever else. He believes that they are not watching the movie. It's like the reps don't count. That's the reason why he makes it the longest possible push before he allows people to see it in that format. So I would just say, by giving him a pass on the third act of The Dark Knight Rises, I am co-signing that behavior and I refuse to do it. So I can't, because that's what got him gassed up enough to make Tenet. And I still, to this day, I'm like, I don't care that it's brilliant filmmaking. I don't care that it's cinematically epic. Bring people along. I'm a fairly intelligent girl. And if it takes me 3 explainer videos and like a whole Wikipedia dump dive to understand what you're doing, your movie's too complicated.
Yeah, look, I mean, Mike and I, we both have ACC reputable university degrees on our wall. And it's a very hard thing to follow. I'll give you that. If we look at The Dark Knight Rises, it's tough to talk about, but it is something I wanted to bring up. With coming off of The Dark Knight and the unfortunate passing of Heath Ledger, Mike, how different of a movie is The Dark Knight Rises if Heath Ledger doesn't die? Do we get a very different ending to The Dark Knight? Do we get a Joker version in this? I mean, we had a nice little Scarecrow cameo at the end of The Dark Knight Rises, which I did think was funny. But does that fundamentally change where we go with this third movie? Or do you think that it played out as it would have regardless?
You know, that's a great question. I don't even know if we would have gotten another film, because where it does end, it ends pretty perfectly. It's like you and I are destined to do this dance forever. You know, we're the you know, two sides of the same coin here. So they kind of let that go, and we leave Bruce Wayne as the villain, you know, riding off. He's the Dark Knight. I think it was such a perfect ending to that film that I don't like. You don't top that film by bringing the Joker back with Batman. Then you've just got round two of them, you know, because the film is phenomenal. It like Jacqueline said, that is a masterpiece film, you know, whether I agree that Batman's not in it or whatever. As a film, you're just engrossed in it. And so do you come back? Like, and he's a filmmaker. We talk about Nolan. I don't think he's like, we can't top what we just did. Like, right. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Another Joker scheme, you know, and Batman's got to stop. I think the circumstances of his passing are why we got The Dark Knight Rises and what we got out of it. So I don't think he continues. I think he's done, because like, again, he didn't plan a trilogy. There was no like, all right, we're going to have the Joker come back for the third one. Oh, Heath passed. Now we can't. And we got to switch this up. So
I think there was an intention beyond Nolan to do stuff maybe.
Right. Like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Heat, right? Because I do think that their idea would be like, oh, let's...
I'm trying to think. Yeah, because at the time, Man of Steel was 2013, and they had done the hint of the Wayne Enterprises satellite and that. So that was when they were starting to get their feet. Like, and they had talked to Nolan, like, hey, Nolan was involved with the Man of Steel stuff. Like, you know, mm-hmm. What are you doing? And Snyder was on the set of that a lot, of The Dark Knight Rises, I believe. So
how much would have been different if Warner Brothers didn't get so fooled by 300 as to putting somebody else on Man of Steel? Y'all can come for me if you want, but the history of our world and the DCEU was paved by Zack Snyder, for good mm-hmm. or worse, and Geoff Johns, and neither one of those would have happened without Man of Steel.
Right.
Because yeah, they did the no one right. with Singer, right? With Brandon Routh, was that the Singer version? And they were like, we're done with you, kid. Seriously.
No,
they
I
were
know.
Like, we're done with you. Never again. Plus, the movie was a failure, but also he was Bryan Singer. So he like quit halfway through the movie, as he always does. By the way, like, that's the also funny thing. Like, he has done that multiple times. Think about what the DCEU could be if Man of Steel forward was directed by somebody else. They still happen, but just directed by somebody else at each one. Like, and really sort of like allowed the franchise to grow up the way Marvel did. Marvel did not have the same director just keep directing things.
Right.
Like, it did do with Josh on the Avengers, but all the other side movies were other directors.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you go by the butterfly effect, then, you know, we still get, I don't know if we end up getting the Suicide Squad with James Gunn and then Peacemaker and this spinoff show. So I think that, and some members of Justice League that may or may not show up in that. It really is an interesting thought experiment to go back and if we look at it just in terms of Batman and in terms of this trilogy, one of the reasons why this movie so doesn't work for me throughout is not because of Batman. It's not because of Bane. I think Bane's a great villain. But the thing that bothers me the most in this movie is the performance of somebody who I like, who I want to like this person, Matthew Modine. Great in Vision Quest. I think this performance is atrocious. There's no other way to say it. He's in a different movie. He is so overacting. Matthew Modine is in a 1966 Batman TV show episode. It's so over the top. And he's playing against Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Gary Oldman, who are just like these grounded characters. And then he's just like, literally, it looks like he belongs with Frank Gorshin and Cesar Romero.
Do you think he was trying to push to get himself a Heath Ledger-style moment?
I do not know what he was thinking, what he was directed to think, but it doesn't fit in the rest of the movie at all for me, Mike.
So you mean you didn't like when, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt just comes up with a symbol that's like, hey, he went down in the sewers. Can someone get this hothead out of here? He's calling him a hothead every scene. Can you get this hothead out of here?
Gordon-Levitt's like,
I had a question about
everyone
the sewers
else
and Gordon.
Had lines. And then Matthew Modine was just like, hey, just improv everything. And it just feels like it's a totally different movie.
I will
he's
say
so good in like Stranger Things. He can act. I just wonder if that was maybe a note.
I said I really like him. He's great in Memphis Belle.
I didn't like his death. That was weird.
None of the deaths in this death? Really
yeah, he comes up, he's got the gun, he starts firing on the building as Talia is leaving. And then she says, run him down or shoot him all. And then the tumbler just passes him and he's dead on the ground. And there was some set video and some set pictures of him or a stuntman being hit by the car as it drove away and him flying in the air. So I don't know if they didn't like the way his death looked.
Maybe they didn't get the shot.
Yeah. So they just passed by him and he's dead on the ground. I was like, that was kind of weak.
Well, then Marion Cotillard, Ra's al Ghul's daughter herself, has a memorable death. I'm going to let that one pass as like a Shakespearean nod just to the over her death scene is Matthew Modine's entire performance in this movie.
I wonder if she's like watching it and she's like, really, Chris, that's the take you used? That was the one that you used? Like, she probably made, you know, 5-6 takes of that. And that was the one they went with.
She's an Oscar winner, y'all.
I know.
Like, legitimately an Oscar winner of a kind of a mediocre movie, but she's incredible in it. Ma Vie en Rose. Not mediocre, not great. It's not as good as it. It's like Judy. It's like it's an okay biopic. She can act. We saw Inception. She can act.
Yeah.
She's great. She's great. And it was just maybe a bad moment for her. I think Matthew Modine was just having an off 2 months. So the dark, but I do want to leave us with some positivity about this movie. So Mike,
yes.
I'm going to ask you just point blank, what is your favorite scene from this movie and why?
It's the montage at the end. It's the final 2 minutes of the film because Nolan gave Batman a happy, like he let him be happy. And we were left and he didn't leave Gotham alone because it ties it back to Batman Begins. It's all about a man can be destroyed, he can be corrupted, but a symbol is everlasting. And they gave that symbol. There would have been a Batman to continue on. He wasn't leaving Gotham alone. So I think the idea of Nolan's trilogy of the bat and the symbol and what it inspires people, and that entire ending with Batman, Alfred being happy, Gotham not being alone, Gordon being kind of reassured that they made the right choices. And Gordon is undervalued in this film. And,
yes.
And Gary Oldman, he really had some great stuff where he talks about like the shackles of, you know, and I had a friend that helped me in with my hands in the filth. Like he had some great stuff. So see everyone, what they
and
all went through over
going
three
through
movies.
It too.
What's up?
You know? His character's going through it too. I mean, the wife took the kid and just took off.
Yeah,
that's
left
rough,
him.
Man.
And they all did that because he supported the Batman and the lies he lived with for 8 years of what they did to get the criminals in jail. So, but to see that all wrap up, I know a lot of people are like, it's like Lord of the Rings. There was 15 minutes of endings at the end there. I think it was handled really well. And so that final 2-3 minutes with the score kind of rising and you know, they said The Dark Knight Rises with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you know, and everyone wanted Robin. And that was Nolan's little clever nod to Robin. I thought it was like, oh, okay, of course he's Robin with the name.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Did that leave you a little cold as a huge comic book fan that and a fan of this particular franchise? Did you want to see like a more clear-cut successor plan, or were you happy with how open-ended it was?
No, I was very happy with the way that ended. Like, Yeah, the way they did Robin, you couldn't have done the Robin in the comics the way it is in Nolan's films. I don't think it would have worked. So to see what it did, I was very happy. And again, I didn't need to see Joseph Gordon-Levitt in The Dark Knight Rises Part 2. The trilogy was done. I don't need to see any more from it.
Yeah, Jacqueline, were you cool with that, with the way that they hinted at the Robin character, then they're like, okay, but we're not going to touch this or ever really acknowledge it?
No, it's stupid. That one is stupid. Like, that is absolutely stupid. It's look, I get it. You want Joseph Gordon-Levitt in your movie to play Robin. I get that, but give the man something to do. The movie felt like too many ideas and not enough follow through. It's really interesting. I do feel like The Dark Knight Rises is like The Hateful Eight for Quentin. I do think Nolan, when he went to Warner Brothers, he gave them a trilogy. He specifically said it was a trilogy. He specifically lined out what he was going to do. And from what I understand, with the way that his deal was set up with them, they were like, we're producing these three no matter what. We'll give you your three Batman movies, because they had given him a sort of fleshed out idea of what he wanted to do in each chapter. The characters, at least the villains, you know, the idea of who he wanted to touch to. So I do think he had to make some adjustments after the Joker died. After Heath died, I don't think the Joker would have played a big role in The Dark Knight Rises, but he might have played a bigger role with the connective tissue to make sense of why we should care about this whole new set of villains. Like, maybe there was something to push the two. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And so, you know, we'll never get the clear answer to that. But I do think that at least for somebody, me and anyone around my age who grew up knowing that Bane breaking Batman's back was such a huge storyline in the comics, we wanted to see Bane, and we wanted to see Bane, that character, get justice for how menacing and intimidating he is, not whatever the Bane, angry Bane from Batman and Robin ended up being. I wanted this version of Bane. Maybe not this exact version of Bane. It would have been nice to understand a little bit more, but I understand why you do it. I totally get the sound mix. I know where Nolan's coming from. And so I was happy with this Bane. It's just the fight sequences between him and Batman just didn't pass the mustard for me. As somebody who's seen a lot of action movies, I just didn't think that they were worth much at all. You can't talk about a Batman movie without talking about the future of Batman. So I don't know if we mute Jacqueline's microphone for this. I do not want to hear anything about the movie other than anticipation going into it. Mike, have you seen the Batman yet?
I've not. Okay. No, sir.
Can just tell me, like, you can give me a scale. You can tell me why you're so hyped for it. How excited is Mike Kalinowski for the Batman?
Anyone that knows me knows what the Batman character like means to me and everything. So I'm already at work on a bat suit. I've got that going. I've had a couple people reach out to me and offer me a ticket to go see it early, and I've turned it down. I want to see it with my group of friends opening night. There's nothing better than an audience of fans that just go in, that aren't sitting there going, okay, sitting back, like either they have to review it or, you know, they're more, you know, or they don't know it. Like, I love going, I usually go with a group of like 10 to 15 people.
You roll big. And with our friend of the show, John Rocha, I've seen y'all at screenings with like 100 of your closest friends.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the way to see these movies. They, you know, and I just love the environment. I love the excitement of the electricity. Like, everything about this film has been like, I don't know if you guys noticed, like, there've been so many interviews with this cast, like talking deep about the film, like, that I don't know if I haven't paid attention in the past 3-4 years with films, or if they just weren't doing it as much, but it seems like everything they say about this film is just nailing it on the head. Like, I remember Reeves was saying, it was one of the fandoms. He was like, Gotham needs to be a character. It's as big a character as Batman. And like, that's why the Nolan, especially Dark Knight, doesn't work for me, because it's just Chicago. Like, that city looks like we could live in it and be fine. Like, Gotham needs to be terrible. There needs to have a Batman. There needs to be a reason for Batman, and your city needs to look, and just everything they say, and that, like Jacqueline said it, the chemistry between these two, there was like an Entertainment Weekly cover of the two of them. Mm. And I was like, Jesus, they just need to bang and get over with it. Come on now. I'm getting the vapors watching these two.
Seriously. I'm sorry. Like, okay. Yeah. Y'all are going to have to do this. I will not spoil anything, but I do want to say these little things. One, go over to RottenTomatoes.com. We have an Everything You Need to Know About the Batman article, which is dope. Erica Maya made it. And it basically gives you everything that we can glean from interviews, press hits, and first look photos. So if you just want to get deed up on what this is, go there. Then go check out the video that I did on Rotten Tomatoes about how Robert Pattinson went from vampire to the Dark Knight. Dope.
I am in, baby. I am in. Huge thanks to the crowds at the Comedy Store last night for being worth missing a screening of The Batman 4. Y'all were very nice people, and if it wasn't a good crowd, I would have been very. I got to meet Dee Snider from Twisted Sister after the show. He was there. So,
wow,
you know, that's so, a plus. Then
that yeah, is a very so, big plus.
It. You know, we all had a. We all had a good night, but I will be there opening night. Maybe I get in on Mike's friends list, but I'm a big bucket of popcorn for me. This is one of my most anticipated, not just of the year, but I think if you go back to like the beginning of the pandemic, knowing that some movies might get pushed back, I would say that when we come out of this, this would be the first movie I want to see is The Batman. I am so excited to check this movie out, and I know all of y'all are ready to do the same, so... In the meantime, we just are killing time until we all get to see the movie. So let's go over to Mailbag. God, I can just talk about Batman movies all day. Remember the summer of 89?
What a summer.
It was everywhere. Prince was on the radio. Everybody was rocking the Batman Converse. This is true. They sold out of black t-shirts. Like there was a run on black t-shirts because so many people were buying them and then making like mock Batman logo shirts and selling them. So it was just, you couldn't escape it in the summer of 89. What a summer it was. All right. Our Ketchup crew member today who writes us, which y'all can email us anytime, rtiswrong@rottentomatoes.com, and send those hook, right? Whatever your hook take is, we want it. Steven Spielberg's hook, audio, video, send us in. Maybe it'll get played in an upcoming episode. So this is from Ketchup crew member Sam Damianova, and he says, "Hi, RT. I would really like to hear a podcast episode of RT is Wrong about the Lion King remake." The Lion King remake from 2019, mainly because there is a huge difference between the audience score and the tomato meter. So the tomato meter for the Lion King, super fresh, 88%. The audience score, 52%. I guess they didn't like the fact that included in the circle of life is a giraffe turd. Did y'all see the movie?
I did.
I love it a lot. I know people hate
the turd in the wind was funny, but Mike, your takes on the Lion King.
I had never seen The Lion King before. Didn't see the animated film.
Wow.
So my girlfriend is Lion King is her Disney film. And we went to see this and I bought her tickets for, what is the L Cap right here in LA? All the sets and all that stuff there. And it was done. And I said, I don't get what everyone loves about this film. that was shot for shot for the animated film. So I don't need to see the animated one again. It's like, I don't get it.
It's different animation.
Did you tell your girlfriend? Did you tell the queen that? Or did you like sugarcoat it?
No, I didn't sugarcoat it at all. I looked over at her and I was just like, I think I did this. That's it? Not for me. Not for me, Mark.
All right. So
That audience score. Yeah, I was down there with it.
I'd encourage you to watch the original because it is.
But it's the same thing. Wasn't this thing shot for shot the same thing?
It is the same thing.
Look. I need to see it.
The new one has Beyonce and Childish Gambino.
Okay.
We win.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. Was upset that
The song is called Can You Feel the Love Tonight? But they're making love in the afternoon. It's like they're lions. They're going to be having sex all day. Okay. Let them do it. You ever see National Geographic? It's just everywhere. All right. Let lions be lions. My God. All right. Thank you for that, Sam. We will maybe take you up on that later on this year. In the meantime, Mike Kalinowski, it is always just a treasure trove of information and enlightenment, particularly when it comes to the world of DC, but not limited to that. And so thank you for once again gracing us with your presence to talk about a Batman movie. Who's your favorite Batman?
Actor?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I got to go Keaton. Just okay. Because, like you said, that's summer 89. And I know he's 5'9", and I know he's about 170 pounds. I get it. I do. But there's just something, that movie just hit me at the right age, it was just awesome. That whole summer of Batman.
And I'll stump for Robert Wool too. Great, great comic relief. What are you working on now? I know you got a book coming out. You have a lot of exciting stuff going on. So have at it. Tell the kids where they can find more stuff.
I believe by the time this episode drops, the book will be out there. It's Bond, James Bond, exploring the shaken and stirred history of Agent 007. I just talking to the publisher. I think we just hit number one on the new release list on Amazon.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was so thank you to everyone that it's been the outpouring of support for this has been incredible. I know it started at the beginning of the pandemic when we pitched the book and I hadn't been able to talk about it on the show with you guys. I hadn't been able to talk about it, but it's out there for everyone to see. Bookstores, Amazon. So yeah, that's, and now it's just kind of going into the tour of getting the book out there.
Oh, congratulations. Anyone taken Bond in a fight over Batman, or do we all have Batman?
I think I have.
Oh, you're going to put
Batman.
Me in the spot.
It's depending on how many toys they get. I do think that Bond's toys will get him out of most jams.
Yeah, I mean, Bond has a lot of nice toys that Q hooks him up with. I mean, Batman's got the utility belt, and I just think Batman, I feel like Batman has been in more brawls. I know James Bond, and especially George Lazenby, can actually like fight. Like on Her Majesty's Secret Service, there's some pretty good fight scenes there, but oh, yeah. I still got to take, I mean, Batman is, they both fight psychopaths, but I think Bond just, I think Bond's fighting tomato cans when Batman is fighting like the world's greatest super criminals from Arkham Asylum. So I think I'm taking Batman.
Someone posted on like my Twitter, it was a comic book cover of Batman and Bond together. And like and I was like, wait, how do I not know this? There's a, and it's like, no, I think it's fan art. It was so well done. Got my hopes so high. And then I was like, ah, man. But it was the coolest thing. It was like Bond and Batman, the Joker, and I think Blofeld were on it together. And I was like, why has no one done a Bond and Batman team up in comics?
That is
why not?
Awesome. Yeah.
Bruce Wayne and James Bond together? Are you kidding me?
Fan art has just like gone over the pale, where now when we see fan art, we're disappointed that it doesn't actually exist. There is Batman versus Predator. That was a cool run from Dark Horse. Yeah, that was nice. So, all right. Well, we got to get out of here because I got to go wait in line and hope that Mike has a plus one when he goes to see the Batman, because Jacqueline did not take me. I didn't ask. That's that one's on me. Thank you so much, Mike, once again for joining us. Make
My
sure
pleasure,
y'all check
guys.
Out not just his James Bond book that is, it's really a, it's a great history, injected with a lot of love and heart and some humor about James Bond. And so it's an achievement, and it's crushing on Amazon. So be like everybody else and go pick it up wherever you enjoy your books. We are at rtiswrong at RottenTomatoes.com is the email address. You can subscribe, rate, review, do all that good stuff. Next week, big, big episode, Jacqueline, because we're talking about a movie. You want sweeping epics? You want sand? We got all of it. Anakin Skywalker would hate this movie. What are we talking about?
Next week, we're talking about my Dune. What does he call it? My Arcanist. Yes, my art. But yeah, whatever. Yeah, my Dune.
Both
so
of
yeah,
them.
Both of Big them. With yeah. Alex Papademos, who is the biggest Dune head I've ever met. And it was really great to talk sand with him. He really had an inventive approach to it.
Sand and spice and everything nice. So for Mike Kalinowski, our special guest here today, Tim Ryan, our review curation manager, Brian Perez, our lovely engineer, producer Lucy, crushing it behind the scenes, my amazing co-host who's seen the Batman, Jacqueline Coley, Molly the Wonder Dog snoring in the corner. I am merely Mark Ellis. Thanks for tuning in to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, and we'll talk to you next time.